You've heard so many strong resonances to the word. And I think part of that is that it's a story. It's this experience that we can feel and visualize and enter into a whole lot more easily than, you know, the last several weeks. Well, last week we would have, if we didn't have the Transfiguration, we would have had another story of the multiplication of the loaves and fish. But before that, we had week after week of the parables of Jesus, which, you know, are lovely and wonderful, but the parables are much more up here in our head, and they're not as easy to kind of enter into the experience. And I think that's where the Word of God can start to activate and can start to bring to life the fullness. And we find ourselves in those stories a whole lot easier. Like the gospel today, if we'd heard last week's, we would have heard that what had happened at the beginning of chapter 14 was that John the Baptist, Jesus' cousin, had been put on trial. And then we hear the story of his betrayal, his death. And, you know, the awful situation about that. And Jesus hears about his cousin, and all he wants to do is to find some space. So he sets off in the boat to find a lonely place to pray. And the people hear that he's going to find a place to be by himself, and they're like, okay, we'll go there first. And there's this crowd, 5,000 men, not to count the women and children who are there. And as he gets on the shore, he has compassion for the crowd, begins to teach them, and then to feed them, to heal their sick. And then finally, he's able to dismiss the disciples, to dismiss the crowd, and he goes to this place to be by himself, up on the hills, to look out over the lake, to see the storm, to see the waves, to see the wind. He's not separating himself. He's not letting the disciples be abandoned. He's holding them in prayer. He's present with them on the boat in a most powerful way in being there. But he's also just facing his human experiences. The reality of grief, the reality of depression, the reality of what does he do that his cousin has just been executed by the powers that be. He knows that's his fate. And yes, he's divine, but in his humanity, he's also processing all of that, processing what it will be like that time, that day when he has to face that himself. And so he's going through all of that as he's there up on the mountain. Perhaps he's thinking of people like Elijah. Perhaps he's remembering those instances that Mary and Joseph would have told him, you know, those great examples and stories of the past. And Elijah's situation is also interesting because, yeah, you're right, that he's running away when he finds himself here. He's had the big confrontation with the 400 prophets of Baal and King Ahab and Queen Jezebel. So he set himself there. He's imagined that he's the only one that is faithful now, even though in the previous chapter he's told that, yes, there are these other prophets who are also remaining faithful. But he seems to just ignore all of that. And he then sets about, you know, setting this test. And we know, we've heard that story enough times to remember those details. And this, you know, mighty man who's then single-handedly, it seems, slaughters all of these false prophets, all these prophets of Baal. And then Queen Jezebel says, well, I'm coming to get you. And that's enough. Like, even though he's just been this mighty warrior slaying all of these prophets, that the fact that this Queen Jezebel wants to have a go at him, that's enough. He turns off and runs off and finds a lonely place where he just sits under a tree and just cries out to God to kill him. I want to die. I've had enough. That's it. And you're just like, how the heck does that make sense? But we know that from the inside. We've experienced that as well. There's days when everything is amazing and everything is going well, and if we feel like, yeah, we're on top of the world, and as soon as there's a voice of criticism, as soon as there's someone who's having a go at us, we just turn tail and think the world is just collapsed and we might as well throw it all in. And then the Lord provides food for the journey, and it's enough for him to then go a 40-day journey down into the further down into the wilderness, and he of course comes to Mount Sinai. And he's there on the mountain, and the Lord says, Elijah, what are you doing here? And he makes that great declaration. Oh Lord Yahweh, I'm filled with the holy zeal, with this zeal for the Lord of hosts. And okay. And then we're told this kind of weird situation. The Lord passes by, but he doesn't pass by. Like, we get this presence of the Lord. He says, yes, I'm passing by. And then the three different manifestations that we get. The wind, the storm, the earthquake, and the fire. We've heard all of those before. And in each instance before, they were signs of the presence of God. Like on Mount Sinai, when Moses is there in Exodus 19. We hear and see that like the people are afraid because there's thunder, there's an earthquake, there's tremors, all of the lightning. So all of those manifestations are there. Well, they're in Exodus 3, of course, the very first time the Lord revealed his divine name was in fire. The fire that consumed or burnt the bush without consuming it. So previously, the Lord has been present in those places, in those manifestations. So it's interesting that the Lord passes by and there's these different experiences, of course, brought by the Lord. And yet, he's not there. And sometimes I think we can be distracted, you know, because we want the big show. We want the signs and wonders. And you know, I grew up in a very charismatic kind of experience. And so all of those, you know, healings and signs and wonders and being able to prophesy and speak in tongues and all those things were seen as, you know, clear signs of the manifestation of God. And there are times when that's true, and there are moments when that is, in fact, yes, exactly right. But there's also times when we need not those just positive experiences or the signs and wonders, but there are those times when the only place where we can encounter God is in that silence. And faith sometimes is just continuing to refuse to not cry out into that silence. Because so often God is silent. So often we try our very best. And we call out as much as we possibly can. And all we seem to get is just more silence. That God doesn't address us and God doesn't give us the sign and wonder. God doesn't provide the miracle that we've been hoping for. And that is frustrating as all heck. That it's just like, why doesn't God come through? You know, we know he can. We know he's done it in the past. We know that he's done these mighty deeds in the past. So why not now? Or you're out in the middle of the lake and the storm is so strong. And, you know, we know that the Lake of Galilee is a dangerous place in a storm, that no right person would be out there in a small boat, because so many people have died there on the lake when the storms come. And to be there in the midst of the storm and then, you know, to see this manifestation, to see this kind of figure, and you're just like, well, it can't be a person because we're in the middle of the lake, and I'm pretty sure we don't normally see people walking on water. And so the fact that suddenly there's this figure there, of course you don't think that it's going to be Jesus. You don't think that that's just not the logical conclusion. that you reach. And then suddenly it's there and crying and calling out. And Jesus is like, don't be afraid. You're like, yeah, that's not going to cut it. That's not helping in the situation. Have you seen the size of these waves? Have you heard the sound of the roar of the wind and the waves? Like, seriously, Jesus, you need a new script. Do not be afraid. Doesn't seem to cut it at times. We need something more. And he's there. And then I love Peter. You know, Peter is just the one that is able to say the most wonderfully stupid things. I love that because it matches so much of my personality, the stupid part more than the wonderful part. But that experience of Peter just saying, well, if it's you, call for me to come out of the water. And that instant response of Jesus. Okay, come. And it's like, there's nothing that Jesus wants more than for us to be with him. You know, there's nothing that is meant to get in the way of that. We put all kinds of barriers, we put all kinds of tests, we put all sorts of things up to prevent the Lord from doing his work. But all he wants is for us to be with him. Because he knows that if we can do that, if we can be in his presence, everything else makes sense. Everything else finally has a reason and a purpose. And that then our answers can begin to be formed. Will it always be the one we want? Most certainly not. That's, again, one of those frustrations that we find and that we continue to experience. And yet, there as he's suffering and grieving and mourning, and he realizes that no, he needs to go and not just be kind of spiritually with his disciples, but he needs to be physically there. And that is so often just his way. That he will wait, it seems, until the last moment, until it's the fourth watch of the night, until it's the darkest part of the night. And then he's there. And nothing will get in the way of his desire to be present to us, to invite us into that experience to come, to find life. And yet we will continue to put all of the stuff in the way of that. Today, we can experience the God who's broken, the God who knows what it's like to be sad, to grieve, to be confused. The God who's experienced all of our rubbish, all of the stuff that we have been through. He's felt it, he's tasted it, he's experienced it. And into all of that, he's simply calling us to come. Come and be with him. Come and keep our eyes on him. Come and experience the freedom that only God can offer. Today, sometimes that will be in silence, not in the wonderful signs and wonders. It will simply be in that experience of nothing, of emptiness, of negativity. But there will be moments and times when through that, you know, the lights do go on and we're able to finally experience the freedom that we've always longed for. So wherever we are, whatever we've been through, the Lord is inviting us to be in his presence. Whatever the situation, whatever the circumstance, we can find our life and freedom only to the extent that we allow that word of come, that word, that invitation to respond, to be the call that we respond to in our hearts.